We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day?
Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment. I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to the Laker Film Room Podcast, brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Pete, joined by Darius and Mike. And the Lakers had a tall task yesterday, playing the team with the best home record in the NBA. And it got a little bit harder, or a lot bit harder, as Anthony Davis exited the game after 8 minutes with some flu-like symptoms, had a 101-degree fever, tried to play through it, but did not make it. Wenyen Gabriel also missed the game. He's going to be out at least a week, as we talked a bit about yesterday. Jared Allen returned and kicked our butts. But the Lakers hung tough for a good portion of the game. It was one of those games where if you woke up this morning and just saw the box score, you'd be like, hey, Lakers got blown out. And then in the fourth quarter, they did. But it was a close game throughout, but they just didn't have enough. And then got a game tonight against Toronto. But what were your thoughts, D, on last night's game?
This is one of those dregs games to me, particularly like after AD went out. Like, I thought they battled hard, just like you said, and I thought that they played well. I thought Cleveland almost always seemed in control, and like,
for sure,
maybe about a half a dozen times, I felt like texting both of you guys, how is the score this? Like,
oh,
I didn't send it one, like, I didn't send it a single time, but like, I thought it, I don't know how many times, like, how are the Lakers up by one, Mike? How are they up by three? How are they only down by four? When it seemed like Cleveland was just doing almost whatever they wanted. It's interesting that you cited Jared Allen, Pete, because he did return second time that a key starter for the other team had returned and looked absolutely like he hasn't missed any time at all.
Yeah.
Like Chris Middleton did
trip.
That in the Bucks game, and he looked like sharp as ever. Jared Allen comes and he looks great. I mean, I guess it's hard not to look great when every basket you get is a dunk, although he did hit a couple of 15-footers and he has got a nice floater that I think is underrated, but that's
for sure
another topic. And if we were doing a Cavs podcast, maybe we dive into the metrics around his floating game. Anyways, I thought the Lakers did not do a very good job on dribble penetration. And I also think it highlighted the fact of how important Anthony Davis is defensively. And so those two things work hand in hand, I think. I think even AD would have struggled some with the level of screen navigation that the Lakers guards were showing last night, because they were not staying as connected, Mike, defensively. And you really need that if you're going to play in a heavy drop the way that the Lakers do. You need the guards to get over the top. And there were, I don't know, some like a handful of possessions over the course of the game where I was just like, yes, that's it. Like Dennis did that a couple of times. Pat Bev did it a couple of times. But there was not a lot of consistency in that specific area of the game. And when you've got such a strong pull-up shooting team like the Cavs, whose guards also are comfortable living in the paint in terms of shooting floaters and finishing at the basket, that symmetry between guards getting over the top and activity from the bigs in the drop are like their necessity to be together. And I thought both of them weren't to the level that they needed to be, but it starts with the guards. And so that's kind of where I was with the game and just where, in essence, the game was lost if you go outside of the idea that the Lakers didn't have AD. What were you seeing, though? And I guess a more specific question, too, is did you feel any lack of spirit from the team? Because on TV, like they were competing, but losing AD is a tough thing to battle against. And so what was your sense of that aspect of it and then the game in general?
This team, you just can't go past losing AD. That is the whole game. That is the whole thing.
Yeah.
It's that simple. I mean, I think there are some teams that can lose a star and they've got the personnel to at least approximate what that star does for a game. And honestly, with this Laker team, like they can somewhat approximate some of the stuff that LeBron does on a given night, as long as they have AD still anchoring other things. And they're not going to nearly be as good. And of course, they couldn't actually win anything without LeBron. But like the level to which they depend on AD's rim protection and his presence defensively is so much bigger of a difference than anything else that another team should say that anything that any other team, we could probably think of a couple examples, like if Dallas was without Luka, right? They wouldn't have that kind of creation and that sort of thing. But so the fact that they were in the game and tied in the fourth quarter was really a testament to just the effort and the scrapping and the offensive rebound and the battling and all that they did. But ultimately, Cleveland still just got whatever they wanted on the defensive side of the court. And I think that the takeaway for me is, like, that's the obvious one. It's that they're not going to be able to do much without AD. But that's the part of this team that's probably still tenuous, you know, when you think about how much they depend on what he can provide uniquely and how consistent he's been in doing it this year. So no team's winning anything without a star one of their two stars, but some teams, when they lose the guy that's that consequential, I think could be in even bigger trouble. And that's where I thought the Lakers were last night, despite all the effort.
Mike, do you think there's anything the Lakers can do about that, whether it's trademark it or, because I've been saying recently that AD is Atlas, right? Meaning that he got the whole Lakers world on his shoulders. But as his, you know, reputation goes, he's somebody that isn't always in the lineup. And it's something that, if I totally agree with your evaluation that a lot of things kind of crumble when he's out, is I don't think that you can build a team with the idea that we can be good without Anthony Davis. There's just no path to it. But when we've got this kind of approaching trade deadline, this trade season, let's call it, where that's one of the things that are really striking to me is that, of course, you can't approximate Anthony Davis, but just the level of drop off is so huge that, like, is that just how it is? Or is that something that you look to address in terms of these final stages of building the roster?
Well, when you build the roster, you still have to account for a healthy Anthony Davis, because even if you build a roster to make up for him and bring in pieces that sort of replace it, you know, that doesn't really work anyway. But I would say it just goes back to the main issues with the roster that we've had all along. And it's the lack of the two-way wings. And it's the lack of that type of collective coverage that you can bring, where maybe you don't have the one rim protector, but you at least have more bodies. And I mean, honestly, though, they'd have to almost play a different style. And that comes with continuity and time. And I think they'll get there. It's like Darvin Ham working in more of his own defense, which he has some. And, Thomas Bryant, who played really well, but is not a rim protector in that sense. Mm-hmm. And then Damian Jones, who can protect the rim in some ways, also doesn't in other ways. So I don't think they have, that's a personnel issue. And yes, in almost any trade, you could try to account for it a little bit, but you know, ultimately you're still, this team still has to be built uniquely around Anthony Davis.
Yeah. One of the things that I would add, Mike, is that in terms of roster and roster deficiencies, I don't necessarily think you be like, okay, well, this is a guy who can even has a very similar skill set to Anthony Davis, but is just like a $5 million or an $8 million version of him instead of a $35 million version of him. I actually think the way that you make up for losing a player like Anthony Davis in a very similar way to the way that you make up for losing a player like LeBron is having higher quality third and fourth best players who have the ability to take on more within the context of their own strengths, right? And so I've been watching random teams play basketball games. And so no inferences from this at all, guys. So don't take any thoughts about this at all. But so one of the things I was watching the other day was the Pistons, and I was watching Bojan Bogdanović basically step up and score a ton of points to like beat some teams. And I'm just like, oh, look at Bogdanović. Like, he was brought in to be a complimentary player to Cade Cunningham and to sort of support some of their other younger players like Sadiq Bey. And then they just drafted Jaden Ivey and Jalen Duren. Right. And these are guys who I think that they see as the future of their team. And Bogdanović isn't necessarily the future of their team. He's 33 years old. Right. And so but with those guys maybe struggling and Cunningham out with injury, it's just like, oh, Bogdanović has the capacity to take on more, even in the even though on any given game, he might be looked at as like the second option or the third option, right? And so the way that you build, like the way that you account for losing Anthony Davis is some of these other guys who have the capacity to take on more, they actually do need to do more. And so within this version of the Lakers, forget the trade market or anything like that. Within this version of the Lakers, that means Russ. We saw some of that with Thomas Bryant, right? Like, we'll see what happens with Dennis Schroeder. He had a couple of good moments, I thought, in the second half of the game against the Cavs. And all of those guys are going to need to raise their game a little bit. And Pete and Mike, like, that's like LeBron basically said as much in post game, like next man up mentality. But it is a tall task, as LeBron said, literally and figuratively, when you lose Anthony Davis. And so to me, it's just like, if you're talking about the trade market potentially, or how you replace a, or account for the possibility that a guy like AD might, like, well, might be out, it's not finding a shot blocking, like do it all power forward center combo freak alien guy. It's maybe finding that wing that Mike has talked about who can score 20 points on any given night. But on most nights, it's just like, hey, just score 14 or 16.
Sure. I mean, that was Kuz a couple years ago on our team, right? Where LeBron or AD would go out and he'd have a 20, 25, 30 point game in him. Not every time, but he had that in him, right? And that was one of the stories I thought of last night, was that Austin struggled, Lonnie struggled, just our jump shooting in general. So that's something I kind of want to pivot the conversation toward is, Mike, your position on this is well known and I mostly agree on it, but this was the ninth time that this season that we've shot under 30% from three. And it was the third time that we've shot under 20% from three. And so to me, the 30% mark is that like magic number. You know how you always say that, you know, difference between 33% and 40% is a couple of shots. But I do think there's a floor to it, that this was similar. If you look at our 3-point shooting numbers this game and then the game at Phoenix, those were two of those sub 20% 3-point shooting nights, where a lot of our guards and a lot of our supplementary role players, that's not really what the main thing that they do as shooters. And so while I agree with your point, Mike, I do think that there's a level of frequency to it that having some more shooting on the roster, I do think is, when we talked about the, like, what do we need, that is something that pops up to me, that we just need to be able to not dip below 30% that often.
Yeah, I don't know exactly what point we're debating here. So for example, like Lonnie Walker was 0-for-5 from three. He's been a really good 3-point shooter. You know, so he's so like you don't take him out of the game. In terms of the personnel, though, like Beverly and Schroeder together doesn't make a ton of sense for me. And that's, it's not because of the, like, part of it is because of the shooting, but it's just in general, they're, you know, you're playing Beverly as a wing and he's just not shooting the ball well, which historically he has always shot the ball fine. He would tell you great, especially from the corner in terms of the shooting. But like that to me is where, you know, the difference between Troy Brown and either Beverly or Schroeder as a shooter is significant. And maybe that makes some of the difference. Then again, Austin Reeves had been shooting 40% from three, if on low volume, for much of the year. He was 0 for 4 and just didn't seem to have legs in this game other than a couple of and one plays. So the team in general has been 37% from three the last 10 games, which is perfectly fine, which is, you know, either in the middle or in the upper half of the league. And that's sort of been my point, is that they have enough. Like, would they, if you got a couple of dead-eye knockdown three-point shooters, fine, but chances are that they don't play defense, and then the Lakers wouldn't be as good in general for other reasons. So that's my general point about the shooting, is that as long as you have guys that can knock them down, but if you play too many guys that have no gravity or just aren't shooting the ball well, then yeah, you're going to lose some games because of that. Even if you were in the game in part because those guys were out there scrapping and fighting and playing. So I don't know if you have to pick one or the other, but the thing that I come down to is the lineup choices of playing Beverly and Schroeder probably a little bit too much, and you know, giving some more of those minutes to one other bigger guy who can at least get cleaner looks at threes.
Yeah, like Beverly to me is the guy whose role is trickiest, because he has a mentality, Pete, that I think the coaching staff likes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's reflected in what his role is on the team. So I haven't had any conversations with anyone on the coaching staff, but in the same way that I always say, show me, well, the coaches are showing me with some of their lineup choices. And Pat Bev is a starting player for the Los Angeles Lakers. So I think that they value him. In fact, let's go to break here, because on the other side, I want to talk a little bit more about Pat Bev in general.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
So like I said, Pete, like the coaches are showing us what they think of Pat Bev. Now, he's not a high minutes player, but he is a starter. And to Mike's point, that means he's playing a fair amount of minutes with Dennis, because Dennis is starting as well. And there is that floor that you talk about in terms of shooting. The Lakers are purposefully, to a certain extent, they are purposefully positioning themselves to live at or underneath that floor in some of the lineups that they're choosing, right? Because the success rate of these players from beyond the arc is what it is. It's on tape. It's reflected in the score sheet. And it's like, go to Basketball Reference and you'll see it. It's right there. And so Bev, to me, is the pivot point for this conversation, because he has value as a defensive player from a mindset perspective and all of this other intangible stuff. But as I've said and written about with Pat Bev before, at some point, intangibles need to be superseded by tangibles, right? And there's not been enough of that, particularly offensively. And that's kind of where I'm at with that? Like, is Bev this glowing? Because I'm going to own this right now. Like, I've been pretty biased against him. Like, just in terms of, like, I don't think he should be playing as much. I think his offense is harmful in a lot of ways, not only because of the misses, but because of the shots he's turning down and the way the defense treats him. And there's this whole list of variables that come into play here. So Bev is one of those guys that stands out to me, but I don't know if he takes up that much attention in your guys' minds as he does in mine, because he's living there rent-free a lot, for me at least.
Yeah, I want to circle back to the main point that we started the podcast with, and I think this has to do with the shooting as well, in that Anthony Davis was kicking teams' asses so much in the paint that they were having to devote extra resources to it, and those threes that they were getting 100%. Were all just a little bit more open. And while some of the threes they missed were just simply wide open threes, and a couple of the ones like where Lonnie was in the corner, where Beverly was out there, but other ones were sort of, well, we're not getting a lot of offense going elsewhere, and it would be kind of the ball would swing around and eventually someone would kind of have to take a three. And those out of rhythm threes are just bad shots relative to what they had been getting. So once again, like, we can point to the shooting, and that's a big reason why they lost the game. But like, the Cavs were 7 for 27 from three. The Lakers were 6 for 36. And that's a bit of a difference, but that's also again, the Cavs got 70 points in the paint. The Lakers got 52, and that's the equation. So mm-hmm. I just think it's always important to mention that part of the context. It's Pete, though, that was more of the question for you, because Darius just weighed in on it. It's the, how much do you include the shooting in it, but just in general, how much do you want to play Beverly and Shooter like next to Walker as the choice of a lineup?
Yeah, it's something that all of it's tied together. And like, when we've been at our worst this year, we've been small and we can't shoot, and you can't be both. Like, you can't win in the NBA. If you're going to have a small group out there, you got to be able to scorch the Nets, because there are so many aspects of basketball that require a certain degree of size and physicality to win that box out or win that tap out rebound. And all these things sound small, but they're absolutely what wins and doesn't win games. And so Bev in particular, like, that a lot of the rationale that's been given for his starting in particular is that he starts the game with a certain mindset that catalyzes the whole team defensively, D. And we have not been as good when he's been out of the lineup defensively. But speaking of shooting under 30%, we're past a quarter of the season. He's under 30% from the field. He's low 20s from three. And then, you know, just as harmfully as you pointed out, D, he's passing up a ton of shots. And so to me, if you're going to, especially with the existing issues elsewhere, like that, I agree with Mike that's that pivot point spot where I'd love to see that Dennis, Lonnie, Troy Brown group. And then if that's second unit, that Russ unit in particular, when we're healthy, is built around two bigs, and Russ can size up for a guard, Bev can size up for a guard, and you got two bigs back there. I think that's just more of a natural fit. But yeah, I think that's a big part of it, is he's that spot that identifies he's that spot that I'd identify as that reason we're small and can't shoot, is largely because Pat Bev is shooting 22% from three while playing the three spot a good portion of the time. And so, and then just one last thing to circle back on the roster. I don't think we need a bunch of guys. I just think we need one guy who would be the best shooter on this team, because I think that would slot Lonnie and Austin and guys like that into more appropriate spots. Like those, Mike, you brought up the idea that stat about Lonnie shooting over the last, you know, certain number of games, and then Austin shooting as well. I try to separate out the San Antonio and Detroit type of games from the Cleveland and Phoenix type of games. And I think if you did that, the numbers would be pretty stark difference. And so I just think somebody who makes jump shots as their job is somebody that would be super helpful in terms of slotting everybody else more appropriately into the right spot on the team.
Yeah. And this is where it gets tricky, because the stuff that Pat Bev does well, like, so Pete, you talked about being small and can't shoot, and some of the things about being small, like the tap out rebounds or the box out, those are actually things that Pat Bev does. So he, sure. and and the scrambling for a loose ball and the knocking the ball away. And those are all quote unquote winning plays. And it's one of the reasons why his plus minus is what it is, or that his on offs are what they are. But you see the difference in offensive production just like with his on offs. And that's the equation that needs to be addressed. And so when you talk about the shooting and bringing it back now to some fictional player, right, that we're discussing here, that variance that you discussed with a guy like Lonnie or a guy like Austin, where their defensive asks go up, right? And then the level of defense that they're facing individually also goes up. That, I don't want to say that like that pressure is like breaking them, but it's just like it's what makes the game harder.
It's a big ask. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's why like stars and superstars are what they are, because the context of those situations does not impact them as much as a role player. And I think one of the things I'm looking for in any potential player, new addition, right, that might come to the team, is this idea of there's less variance in your game, depending on what the situation is, or
we can rely on you to do.
Yeah. This.
Is that jump shooting in your mind, or is it beyond that?
Yeah. I think that jump shooting is super important there. And then also too, like that floor that you talked about in terms of shooting, there's also a floor to me in terms of like defensive reliability.
100%.
And you can't dip below that floor either.
Nope.
For me,
and it's a lot, like Mike was saying, a lot of times that guy who is that 3-point shooter is exactly the same player that's going to dip you below that defensive floor.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. And so I'm not trying to claim that there's like 100 of these guys in the league and the Lakers could just go and get one for a second round pick. Like, that's not how this works, right?
Nope.
And so I'm not trying to make it seem easy or anything like that. And a lot of times, building out an NBA roster or a functional NBA lineup that can win at a level that is requisite with what your team goals are as a franchise like the Lakers, it's whack-a-mole. It's just like, well, how can we minimize, like, okay, let's take these weaknesses and how can we like minimize them just a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more so that the overall level of your floor goes up and up and up to the point that your stars then push you over the top. And this version of the roster, I think there are just some critical parts where they do live beneath that floor just a little bit too often. And it's tough to say how you rebalance that out, Mike. Like when you're cooking a good meal or baking a cake, as Pete has said before, like all of those ingredients do need to be in balance. And if you add too much of this, it's going to maybe pull you in a direction where you lose something else. And it's like, it's not an easy job, and it's why a president of basketball operations is like, you know, under such scrutiny, because every decision comes with a certain amount of like, oh my goodness, this could wreck my team if it goes wrong.
So while you guys were, or while you were talking there, I was getting all of the injury updates that are, by the time people listen to the podcast, right, you will have already
breaking
seen
news.
Tweeted. Breaking news from like 3 hours ago or whatever it might be. But basically not a lot of guys will be playing, right? So Davis is going to be out with, the non-COVID illness. LeBron's not going to play because of left ankle soreness. Mm. Beverly is doubtful, with right knee soreness. And then we already know that Gabriel is out. So, you know, it's especially on the second night of a back-to-back, Darius wrote about Toronto in his game preview and some of the difficulties that they present. I get it in terms of LeBron has been really sore with the ankle and AD clearly not playing well enough to even finish a game. And they still do have the chance, I think, to kind of gear up, get refocused, try to get to 4-2 on the trip, try to win at Philly, try to win at Detroit. But it's going to be a tough game in Toronto, you know, unless Russ really has one of his throwback to 5 years ago, just chaotic, do everything. And he almost did it in Charlotte last year, if you guys remember, until Ish Smith
that was a fun
came
one.
In.
Yeah.
Right? Do you think he starts?
And basically.
Oh, that's an interesting question. Do you think he starts, Mike? Yeah.
Yes. Well, okay. So hold on. Now let me just rethink this for a second, because you do have Schroeder and Darvin does like him in that spot. So I guess he could still do the sort of come in after 3 minutes and just sort of maintain the sanctity of that. And, you know, you start like it'd be Dennis and Austin and Lonnie and Bryant. And then who's starting at the four? Yeah, I mean, I don't know. You're running out of guys pretty quickly. But I wanted you guys to react
against
to that.
Against a bunch just, of big wings. Because,
yeah.
Honestly, Mike, I've had this game circled as a schedule loss for quite some time since this schedule came out, really. I think this was a really tough back-to-back in which the Cleveland game, you know, only the team with the best home record in the NBA, that was the more winnable of the two games. Toronto is also very good at home. They're 9-3 versus 3-9 on the road. Yeah, so this has been a game I've had as a schedule loss for quite some time. So I'm fine with it. You know, let's get those games against Philly. Let's get the game against Detroit. Maybe we could surprise him, D, but I've had very low expectations, which with Mike's news just there got a whole lot lower. So,
well, this is where, and hear me out here, this is where I love these sorts of games. And I bet the coaches sort of in their heart of hearts sort of love this sort of game too, where it's just like, you know, all my horses are staying in the stable this game. And I'm just going to be like, hey, let's go out. Let's have fun. We're going to play the dudes. Like we only have 9 guys now. All y'all going to play? All y'all going to get 15 to 20 minutes? Tonight, mm-hmm. Everyone can play free and loose. And that idea of no one expects us to do anything tonight. And so to speak to your question earlier, or my own question about whether Russ starts, I bet he doesn't start, actually. And I bet he does come in around the 3-minute mark. I would probably start some ultra small version like of Dennis and Lonnie and probably Austin and Troy Brown and then TB, right? And it's like this revolving door of like, okay, well, in comes Russ and he's going to come in with JTA and whoever, sure. Right? Because this is just the group that's going to just run up and down and almost play a very similar style to what Toronto plays and like live in that environment. And then Russ is going to come in and I feel like he's just going to try to wreak havoc and do Russell Westbrook stuff. And those games in their own way are fun. I don't care what the scoreboard says at the end. It's just sort of like, we're going to go out there and compete and do what we do and just try to make it happen.
I think there's an evaluative component to it as well. Like a guy like JTA, Mike, hasn't gotten legitimate shifts in several weeks. Kendrick Nunn has been out of the rotation, right? You got Damian Jones got some run in the last game. And I think that these guys if LeBron and AD doesn't play, doesn't apply. But I do feel like we know what we are more than we did when those guys were getting shifts right at the beginning of the season. And so I am interested to see how do those guys who haven't been getting playing time, who certainly will as a result of all of these guys sitting, like who plays well, what are the 2 and 3 man groupings that show a little bit more chemistry now that we know a little bit more of who we are? And so just it's, you know, I don't have any expectations for a win, Mike, but I do think that stacking small W's, this is a chance for a small W tonight, even if it's not on the scoreboard we can learn lessons that are applied to future games.
I think the hope for a game like this, and it's somewhat cynical, but it's that the other team doesn't take you that seriously. And again, this goes back mm-hmm. to my days of working for the Timberwolves when they were able to win a bunch of games when the other team just sort of tricked it off, thinking like, I don't really want to get up for this. Now, I don't think that happens with the Lakers, even when guys are out. And that's just part of being the Lakers. And generally, it's a good thing. And especially with Westbrook, and we'll see if Beverly plays, he's doubtful. But especially with Westbrook out there, like you're always going to get a certain level of having the other team's attention. And this is a competitive group of Raptors players anyway. These are guys that play hard. These are guys that I don't think just sort of take the night off. So if you remove that possibility, then it really just does come down to guys enjoying the increased usage that they have and being scrappy, which is part of the reason why I wish Wenyen and Gabriel were playing. Because and by the way, remember Wenyen was key in the win last year at Toronto?
Yep.
At least I remember that. Yep. Now, of course, I should fact check it while we're talking here. But there are a couple things that the Lakers, I think, can still do well, and a couple of problems that they can present. And one of them Darius laid out was just not turn the ball over and let Toronto get up and down in transition. So can Schroeder and Russ and the ball handlers keep things in the half court and then still try to run off of Raptors misses? And if they can do that and just kind of keep the game close, then who knows what happens down the stretch. But you know, certainly the Raptors are going to be favored heavily to win this game. And they should. They should win this game. The Lakers just have to hope that they can piece together a couple of things enough to stay in the game.
You know, Pete, per cleaning the glass, Toronto has the worst half-court offense in the entire league. So one of the things that Toronto does to win basketball games, and Toronto's 500. They've lost three of their last four. Now, they've played some tough games and against some tough opponents, but they've gotten some of their guys back, like Siakam's back, Barnes is back. They're still without Otto Porter. They're still without Precious Achiuwa, but they've got guys. But one of the things that they do in order to win games is they win the possession game, right? So they're great on the offensive glass. They're great at forcing turnovers, and then they live in transition, right? And so now, one of the ways, and Pete, you know this because like you've coached small ball teams, right? But one of the things you love to do when a team loves to run, you run right back at them.
You run on a running team. Yep. That's one of the basketball, one of the rules. Yep.
Yep. So one of the things I'm interested in seeing is the Lakers basically saying, okay, well, this is the style of game you want to play. Well, how's it look when it's all of this? And Darvin, I'd love it if he pulled Dennis and Russ aside before the start of this game and was just like, hey, man, it's 48 minutes of hell this game. Like, we're going to run. I know we've only got nine guys, but we're going to go after it as best we can. And we're going to play small. We're going to play fast, and we're going to attack. And I'm not saying that's going to lead to a win, but I think it could make for a very entertaining basketball game.
Sure.
All things considered, with the Lakers top guys all sitting out this game.
You mentioned that Toronto has the worst half-court offense in the league per cleaning the glass. I would imagine that the Lakers' half-court offense would be even worse if they played a bunch of games without LeBron James and Anthony Davis, right? So I think both teams have motivation to get out and run. And of that mind, they're probably going to crash the glass on us. They do it a lot against other teams, and we're a team that teams do that against us more than other teams because we play so small. So that's something that that's one of the ways you can make a team pay for crashing the glasses. If you do get the defensive rebound, you got numbers and an advantage going the opposite direction. So might be a high scoring one in transition or a low scoring one in half court. We shall see tonight. We'll be back tomorrow to talk about that. And then I've been dying to do like net ratings, just numbers type of pod. And so depending on how tonight's game goes, I'd love to do that for tomorrow's pod. So if you guys got any numbers you want to bring to the table, please do for tomorrow. But until then, you've been listening to Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
James has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn his double team. Just pass out of front, broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
Yes, Magic got it. Magic fires. It's good. And the Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game. Rebound to Lonnie. 3 seconds left. Van Exel to win it. It's on the way. Good!
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. Shaq with his eighth block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Ready pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move. Two, one, miss it.
Unbelievable. For the victory. It's over.
And shot clock now to five. Bryant. Yes.
And that was a little tap to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis, 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good! Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers! James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.